Today's Saturday, November 2nd, 2019, and this week on the Shell and Tell podcast, we catch you up on the rest of our Minnesota adventures as we come back from our trip. We give you our takes on a couple of really bad losses. What can we look forward to try to salvage what's been a pretty crappy season? Stay tuned. All right, Ryan, it's been about a week. We promised the fans that after our Minnesota trip, or at least after the game, we'd sit down, we'd turn on the mics, and we'd fire up some more conversation about our trip. But after that game, I don't think either one of us wanted to sit down and talk very much.
No, we needed to salvage that day. So yeah. We had such a great day that game was an immense letdown. Yeah. And therefore needed to find some way to salvage it. We didn't think just sitting in a hotel room and discussing how bad we are was going to do that for us.
No, I mean, look, again, Minnesota in itself, just to kind of go back to the trip for a minute, beautiful city, great people. Everybody down there was very warm and very welcoming, almost in a kind of strange kind of way.
Yeah, I was a little taken aback. These young, like, elementary age kids walked up to me and tried to shake my hand and say, "Welcome to Minnesota. Thanks for coming." And I was like, I was a little put off, because like friendliness is kind of like usually sarcastic in the Baltimore, D.C. area. And I'm right. Like, is there like a site coming? And Fred was thinking, like, are they going to sell me something?
Yeah, I legitimately thought like they were coming up asking for us to buy a candy bar or something. Yeah. Or like donate to their, you know, their local baseball team or football team.
Yeah, no, but they were just completely welcoming. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to try to teach my kids that. That's great parenting. That's
and it happened, great A stuff. It happened multiple times. So it wasn't just like one set of, oh, really well-parented kids. No, it was quite a few.
The second set of kids took me back even more. I'm like, are they doing this stuff in schools? How are they teaching people to do this? It was very interesting. So it's super friendly. Again, it's hard to take as a Baltimore resident. You just don't see it enough. Even when we were packing up to leave, we had all our bags packed on our shoulder carrying to the train station, and this lady's walking her dog. She's talking to some other lady all the way across the street, but she sees us head to the train and is like, "Thanks for coming, guys. Hope you have a safe trip.
Bye, buddy."
And it felt so much like, bye, go home. You know what I mean? Like, you in the stadium, you're like, take your keys and go. Hope you have a nice ride. But it wasn't. Yeah. It was like heartfelt and like that she actually wanted us to have a safe trip. It was real weird.
Well, the game itself, or at least the game day experience, started off kind of rough. You know what? Before we even get there, I'll let you kind of comment on this, because this is something that kind of caught your attention, and you brought it up to me a couple times. Was actually pre-game, before the game, the Minnesota actually has a well brought up and a well designed pre-game show on TV before the game starts.
Yeah, I mean, so the community buy-in, again, we talked about Minnesota is the most direct relation to us, where they have a pro basketball team, they have a pro baseball team, they have all these other things they're competing against. So they are the most direct correlation. That's why people always give me that the Terps don't get the attention that an Ohio State does in their town where they're the only show. Well, Minnesota is not the only show in town, but the community has bought in. The local news crew has a morning of college game day style,
very similar,
out front of the stadium that started at 9 a.m. So, or it was from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. or something like that. But so it's in your face. It's letting you know there's a game here. It's letting you know that it's a part of the community. That's how you get it in front of little kids. That's how you see little kids thinking that you're a part of something. Even like the PJ Fleck show, you know, we have Mike Locksley on Wednesday nights down in Looney's in College Park, and that's live streamed on Facebook now. That's great. And it's been on 1 and 5, 7, The Fan, as long as I can remember, with, you know, whatever coaching staffs. But this, theirs is actually televised. So it's just another step in the right direction. And then we got talking to like some of the parents and the super fans that were there with us and stuff. And there's lots of ways that Maryland could do this. If the local news crews aren't going to buy in and do this on their own, you could do a paid for TV thing. The school could buy hours and put it out there. You could, you know, do a rotating thing where you have or let the students do a broadcast and try to get it out that way. Or, you know, rotate podcasts like us. Give more access.
Show and tell, but pregame show. I'm for it.
I mean, give more access to people and just like maybe like rotating basis till you figure out something that works, something like that. There's ways to get this going and compete. And I truly think if you really want to be even that tier two in the Big Ten, and you want to start keeping your local Maryland talent at home, it has to start much younger. And that's how you start younger.
Right.
You wake up every morning as a 10 or 12 year old and you see it on TV. Oh my God, there's going to be a football game today. I want to watch this football game today. Everyone seems to care because the news crews are there. Everyone seems to care because we started talking about this football game on television on Wednesday.
Right.
Like, you don't get that here. It's an afterthought.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting about this fan base was we got down there probably about, I don't know, two and a half hours prior to kickoff. And I honestly wasn't that impressed with the tailgate scene there. I mean, now granted, it was very structured. They had a couple of lots they do the tailgates on. Everybody kind of had a real nice setup there. Some very nice setups with TVs and surround sound setups. Like it was pretty intense as far as that goes. But it just didn't look like a real big like party atmosphere. Not what you would expect on a college campus.
Not a 7-0 atmosphere for certain. I think that the quality was there.
Right.
The numbers were not there in so many ways. So their parking lots were half empty.
Yeah.
The stadium was half empty.
I wouldn't say half empty. Okay. It was probably three quarters.
For a 7-0 team that was awful.
No, 100%. That stadium should have been packed.
Yes. Their student section's amazingly small. Actually, me and you did not discuss this very much.
Yeah,
but
it was small.
Their student section is a third to a quarter of what Maryland student section is.
But they stayed the whole game.
They did stay the whole game. But it makes me wonder if that's... I also have heard, since we went there, I did not know this at the time, but that Minnesota is one of the very few teams that your college tuition does not cover your football tickets. It's a separate charge.
It may be
a minimal charge, but it's a somewhat of charge. And it gets me into like the economics brain of like a scarcity principle. Like, even if you paid $5 for a ticket, I paid for this ticket and I'm going to stay here.
So I'm going to go.
Yeah. Or there's only, you know, 1,000 of us allowed in the stadium. So I need to get there early and be in that 1,000 and I'm going to stay the whole time. Where at Maryland, it's like, oh, yeah, I could come and go as many times as I want.
That's true.
You can get a ticket to any game outside of Penn State. So what's the big deal if I go? I can leave at halftime. I can show up in the second quarter. So I wonder if there's something to that. And I'd be interested in looking into whether that helps change the perspective if you'd ran it that way.
Well, another note I wanted to pass along for you fans out there that are potentially thinking about going on a road game. This is the part of the experience that we had while we got there. So we bought our tickets directly through the university, through the team, which for one was a bad choice because we ended up paying a lot more money for those tickets than we probably could have bought them for face value if we would have just got them game day or even prior to the game day. I think we saw flyers with kids walking around selling these tickets for like $7 to get in there.
Yeah, we ended up paying $75 a ticket. We certainly could have got better seats for $75 a ticket.
And that's the other thing. So they stuck us in the corner of the upper deck of a stadium that was not sold out. So it was kind of crappy in that sense. But before we even got into the stadium, so we get down there. We got to pick our tickets up from Will Call. This is a note, again, for you fans out there that are thinking about going to an away game, maybe something you want to consider. Will Call, there's a separate area for Maryland-issued tickets for the visiting team, and there's going to be a separate Will Call for you to go pick those tickets up. Which Will Call does not open until an hour before kickoff. So if you're planning on getting down there 2 hours, 2.5 hours early like we did, unfortunately, you're not going to be able to get your tickets or get into the stadium until at least an hour before kickoff.
Yeah, it was really interesting. My ticket agent told me that my tickets would be at Will Call. Did not explain to me specifically that was just a random door on the back of the studio that did not, or the back of the stadium that did not say Will Call. It said player pass entrance or something.
Yeah, it was very vague.
It was very vague. Even now, it doesn't really make all that much sense. But what was cool about it was we went into the same entrance with all of the guests of the players and coaches, or the players and coaches' guests.
Yeah, and even prior to that, since we walked around the entire stadium looking for this door that was like non-existent. We ended up meeting up with some of the players' parents and talking to them, and we actually got to see the team bus pull up and the players let out, and I got video of it. It's kind of cool. It's an experience that I've never had before at a college game, so it was cool to see that. But then eventually we did get into the stadium.
Yeah, after we were told multiple times by the will call window that it looks just like this. It's just on the other side of the stadium.
No.
There were no will call windows on the other side of the stadium. No. It was a barely marked one glass door.
There was one security guard standing around guarding a bunch of porta pots that knew
where it was.
Where it was.
Thank
God. Thank God for that guy. I even said to him, like, you, sir, earn a gold medal for the day.
We would still be circling that stadium if he wasn't there.
Absolutely. We would have been so frustrated. Nonetheless, we get in and we got to talk about the game a little bit. You know, just to kind of preface where we are right now, we just got home from the Michigan game, right? So my frustrations are going to come across for 2 weeks, right? So this isn't just Minnesota, so to speak. This is Minnesota and Michigan. I'm sick of seeing Josh Jackson on the football field. I've been saying this now for a couple of weeks. There's obviously something going on with this kid mentally, because he's just not missing some of these throws by a little. I mean, he's so far off, it looks like he's throwing the ball with his eyes closed. That's how bad it is. And it's not as something as simple as just saying, well, his mechanics are off, or you know, maybe he's just a little hyped up and he's overthrowing the ball. These balls they look like they're being thrown by a blind person.
That's certainly the case in Minnesota, where you actually saw Locksley on the sidelines say he was wide open. What happened?
Yeah.
And he was.
And I love the fact
open
that they caught that on TV. It was great.
What happened? And he missed him by at least 5 to 10 yards outside of where he was standing.
Yeah.
On like, not even like, yeah, he was rolling to his right, but it wasn't like a sprint or anything. It was like a mild jog. Like, you should have practiced that 1,000 times.
Right.
Like, that's the whole basis of your RPO offense. And, you know, we had lots of interesting issues that game. You had multiple quarterback sightings. You had Pigram, who had his own issues.
And you know what? Well, Pigram wasn't terrible if his wide receivers could actually catch the ball.
Yeah.
And Dante Demas in this game had two balls go off his hands. Now, granted, I will say, maybe they weren't the perfect pass, but you're a college Division I wide receiver, both hands on the ball. You got to come up with that, and they both led to big interceptions.
Yep, and that was, you know, my drunken prediction of us winning the game was that Dante Demas was going to prove he's a number one receiver in the Big Ten. Unfortunately, that did not happen and was probably the biggest reason that we at least lost that badly. We probably would have lost either way,
right?
Even if he did show up. But he was two giant interceptions ricocheting off his hands made that prediction the worst thing that I said that week.
Yeah, Terrell Pigram was 6 of 9 for 43 yards in this game in Minnesota.
Not great, but again, those would have been a lot better if people caught the balls that hit them.
Yeah, that's very true. That's very true. Well, we did get to see Tyler Dessou in this game, and I know you and I have been talking about this since before the season started. This is a guy we want to at least see what he looked like in this offense, and we were kind of scratching our heads as to why he hadn't gotten a chance yet. Yeah. Well, he came in, and you know, granted, he didn't have a great game. I think he was 4 for 12 statistically. It's not a very good game, 33% completion percentage. But what I liked about it is it didn't look like the game was too big for him, even going into a game where you're losing that badly and you've got the issues that you have on your offensive line and all that. He didn't look too panicky. Again, some of the incomplete passes that he had weren't off as bad as some of the throws that we've seen from Josh Jackson. So I'm kind of pulling at straws here, but I thought there was marginal improvement having Dessou on the field.
Yeah, I mean, like people say, you have two quarterbacks, you don't have any. So that's right, pretty much where we're at, no matter who's behind center. But he was in there in a big moment. I don't think PJ Fleck had called the dogs off yet. From watching, I think they were still trying to put up points. They were still trying to embarrass the team. So he was playing against most of their starters. Granted, they could have been a few pulled off, but it's not like he was playing against the practice squad out there.
Right.
Still showed some elusiveness, had the big play down the right sideline for Fleet Davis.
Yeah.
Which, again, it was a good throw. Most of that play's credit goes to Fleet Davis. He was a grown man, shrugged off his defender about 15 yards out and ran in for the touchdown. But still, he put it in the right spot. I mean, you can't say that for Josh Jackson that game. That's for sure. The balls weren't anywhere catchable.
No, it was pretty freaking bad. I mean, when you give up 498 total yards of offense, your defense isn't playing very good. Your offense can't move the ball for crap. I mean, you're not going to beat any Big Ten teams playing football this way. I try not to make excuses, and I try not to be too much of a homer either. I love my Terps. I ride or die with my red and black. But at the end of the day, I'm frustrated, and I'm frustrated because these are things that if I'm a coach, right, I want to see my coaches coaching my players up, right? And I don't see that on the sidelines. I don't see it from locks. I don't see it from the assistants. And these are critical times where kids can be susceptible to either getting in their head and getting too low and getting too down and not really learning from things, where if you have a coach that's focused on that, that's something that it's invaluable. It's something that, especially when they're this young, college athletes, you got to get into their head and you got to kind of make sense of it all for them.
Yeah, I think me and you, unfortunately, are both from a very old school mindset, though, where we're looking for one type of in your coaching them up and one type only, the aggressive, in your face, angry type coaching that me and you are used to receiving as children.
Right.
And I think that that's a really sticky spot for Maryland to be in after losing their last coaching staff for being those hyper aggressive and daunting and some would say terrifying coaches for playing horror films and things that we got caught
there's
with.
Lines to everything.
there are lines. I'm just saying there's a little devil's advocate. Yes, you need, I would like to see more. There are things from the team itself that I think could improve optics. We were discussing that, like, running backs getting 3 and 4 yard carries, the linemen are right there. Nobody's going and picking up the running back.
Right.
You know, things like this that are just built into the interesting thing that we saw with the Minnesota team. They will not put the ball down. After every play, they run the ball to the refs and hand it to them.
Right.
And it's quirky and it's a little weird, but it's a mindset thing that I kind of enjoy. So
it's
like
a team thing.
Those are very interesting things I don't see a lot of. I mean, you can't just steal that from PJ Fleck. That's not how that works.
And what I saw out of PJ Fleck that I liked was he was getting into the huddles. He was getting into the offensive huddles. He was getting into the defensive huddles, special team huddles, trying to really fire his guys up when his team is crushing Maryland. This started in the beginning of the game and it carried through all the way to the end. You don't see that out of Locksley. Out of Locksley, you legitimately see him standing on the sideline. I mean, not really talking to his guys like he should, in my opinion.
I mean, you see like some fatherly type things. You see some like conversational stuff, but yeah, he's definitely not a rah-rah guy.
No.
At least during game day. I don't know. I'm still fully on the Locks train. I'm giving Locks at least 2 years before I start complaining.
Don't take this as me not being happy with Locks or really the coaching staff. It's just there's certain things, I guess, maybe we've taken for granted over the years with prior regimes, and maybe I know things are changing, you know, just in society in general. You can't talk to people the way you once talked to them. You can't coach guys the way you once coached them and all. I get that. But you can't be so far away from it that you're not doing anything. And I feel like there's a lot of that goes on. And that's just frustrating when you got a team that came out of the gates as strong as this Terps team did, and now they've just fallen on their face, and I feel like there's nobody there to catch them.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing that we did see is I don't feel like the players really feel this way. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they've lost the locker room. I don't think that they've, you know, started hating on each other in any way. From being there so early and seeing some more of the interactions, seeing people off the bus, and even when they were all standing in the lobby together, that was one of the most hilarious things.
Yeah.
As you have 150 people just got off buses, and now they have to take 2 elevators to their hotel rooms. So the entire lobby jam-packed full of football players, and to see them go, you still feel like they're getting along, that they're you know, happy to be there. It's more than a business trip for them. So luckily they're not feeling the distress that the fans are feeling right now.
And that could very well be. And that's, I guess one of my worries, or one of my biggest worries, is I know going into this whole changeover that this was going to take time, that to have expectations that this team, this year's team, was going to come out and be a bowl team or even better than bowl. I mean, you know, I went pretty high on this team. Just kind of looking at them in the spring game, I thought, man, this team could win 7-8 games, right? Just that was my expectation with it. But I feel like that's unrealistic expectations when you really look at where this staff was and where this university was just 12 months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I went with 5 or 6, and I don't know that I'm going to get either one of those numbers. No. I'm hopeful for 4.
I think we're pretty much done at 3.
I'm still hopeful for Nebraska.
Well, let's move on a little bit to today's game, being that it is fresh. And it continued. Josh Jackson, again, out in the game, started, looked terrible. I mean, they're just, for me, there's no positives. There's nothing of value that Josh brings when he's at the quarterback position anymore. If he can't throw the football, he had maybe 1 or 2 good passes in this game that were beyond 10 yards. Outside of that, every ball that he threw, even some of the ones that he threw 2 and 3 yards away from himself behind the line of scrimmage, were just so far off.
He had one ball in the first quarter that was ruled a backwards pass thrown out of bounds that was behind the receiver. Also had a few rollouts to the right that were high and wide right, just like the Minnesota game. Yeah. Very similar mechanics on those plays. We were pretty much calling for another quarterback after 2-3 drives today, but we're not.
I was listening. Calling for another quarterback the minute I saw him march on the field for the first drive.
Well, I agree that we both wanted a different starter today, but once he was there, I was trying to see what Locke sees, because again, I still am on the Locke
train. So that's my question, is what does Locke see in this guy? I mean, I don't understand what the infatuation is, because there's, again, nothing of value that he brings. He's not beneficial in the run game, really. He cannot throw the football. I mean, when you've got guys like a Lance LeJean sitting in the wings, you got a Tyler Dessou who's much more mobile, and you have Terrell Pigram. Now, granted, Piggy not available in this game as he was hurt, although it does show in the stat sheet that he was 0 for 1, so apparently he did come in at some point. I just didn't see it.
Somehow we missed that one.
Somehow.
We were getting a beer.
Very possible. But I don't understand what the infatuation is with him. He just brings nothing of value at this point.
I mean, I think that he, as a statue passer, is probably a little bit better than Piggy is a great passer, but Piggy only throws at 100%. We've made this point before.
Yeah,
he throws 1,000 miles an hour. He's like Brett Favre. There's no touch. He's just ripping it into the hole.
Right,
and is pretty accurate when he does it, but he only does that. There's no touch pass. So I think he probably has more, you know, quote unquote arm talent, but in game speed, game activities, it's just not showing.
He was 9 of 20 for 97 yards in this game. And I'm going to tell you, of that 97 yards, probably 50 of it came in 2 passes. And that you and I were like, holy shit, he completed the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. They were both to Brian Cobbs, and they were both, one of them kind of looked like he hung him out to dry, but somehow he got back down underneath that hit.
Yeah, I mean, he threw 4 or 5 balls in a row to Cobb.
Yeah.
It looked like he started moving the ball. And okay, so that was one of my frustrations in this game, is actually the defense didn't play terribly in this game. The defense held their own, considering this was Michigan. Early on in this game, we fell behind. Obviously, they had the big kickoff for a touchdown to start the game off. They had another touchdown, so they were up 14-0.
Which 14-0 was worse than it looked, because we were within the 10-yard line on both drives. It could have been tied 14-14.
And that's my point, is we had 2 opportunities. We got down into the red zone twice, and both times we were unable to capitalize.
Absolutely unable to capitalize. One on the interception. Now, granted, he got hit before that ball went in the air, but he gets hit a lot more than any of the other options ever would. And we've both seen Piggy this year avoid sure sacks and complete the ball or get 6-7 yard runs. Lance LeJean showed today how elusive he can be. Now, I feel like they were way too run heavy and should have let him air the ball out a little bit in his small package.
Right.
And even Tyler Dessou, yes, I think he took 1 sack in the Minnesota game. But he was able to scramble. He was able to elude, even give a little bit of time. Jackson is either it's over, play's over, it's out, or he's sacked. There's no expanding time. There's no, oh, this is breaking down, I'm taking off. Sure, if you call a quarterback run, he can get you 5 or 6 yards because he's not a complete statue, right, a Tom Brady. He's like a, I don't know, Flacco. He's straight line speed only.
Well, for you fans out there that have been clamoring to see more Lance LeJean, I'm kind of with you, but there's a couple of factors that you got to keep in mind. One, obviously, I think the team has decided they don't want to burn his red shirt, so they're monitoring how many games that he's actually involved in, because you can only play in 4 to not burn your red shirt. This today would have been game number 3, so he only has one more game of eligibility to not burn his red shirt. And then we had a fan of the show come up and talk to us today. I'm not going to mention any names, but we got a little bit of inside information in the sense that what they've seen out of him in practice is he's been a little bit slow in picking up the playbook. They actually put together a package for LeJean today. It was a small package. I want to say it was like 5 or 6 plays, this guy told us. And we saw him out there. We saw him get more. It was more of the run pass option, RPO style offense with him out there, and
it was the run option until the fourth quarter.
Pretty much, it was run left, run right, and he
hand the ball off middle.
To this guy's point, he does kind of have similar attributes to a familiar name here in the state of Maryland, in Lamar Jackson. He has that ability, that playmaking ability with his feet. We saw him make a couple of nice runs in this game, one of which he ended up absorbing a pretty big hit on. He's going to have to learn to get down a little earlier than that.
Yeah, he was well past the first down marker. He could have avoided that hit.
Exactly. So there's definitely things that we're going to need to see him work on. I would like to see what he looks like more throwing the ball, because we didn't really get a chance to see him throw the ball too often in this game. But I think the future is bright, and I think the future starts with him. So it's really important that you keep this kid's spirits up and you keep this kid involved in the program, because you do not want to see a guy like this
enter the transfer portal,
because that puts us back even further.
That's where the wheels fall off. Obviously, this season is not what anybody wanted, but we haven't lost much until you start seeing a Nick Cross, a Lance LeJean, even a Chance Campbell at this point, because we're all very high.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to him. We didn't see him on the field today.
Yeah, didn't hear his name. I don't know if there's an injury issue or what's going on. Obviously, he's played out of his mind, so there'd be no reason to put him in the backdrop. So we'll have to hear maybe on Loxley's Tuesday update. Maybe they'll talk about that.
Right.
But yeah, we got to make sure that I would like to see him and Dessue, you know, at least believe they have a future here, so that we can keep them tied up and ready for next year.
Yeah, and then I think for this program to be successful more immediately with the guys that we have, one, we need to have a pretty good recruiting class come in, which so far has been kind of lackluster with some of the recruits and commits that we have so far. But
in the positions of need, we definitely have some good defensive backs and linebackers lined up. Very happy with that. It's a wide receiver too,
right?
But in the trenches where we are obviously lacking,
my point,
it has been lackluster,
and that's where we're gonna need to see Locks kind of show his magic. He needs to get out there. He needs to get some junior college transfers in. He needs to get some of these guys that are in the portal, maybe not getting enough playing time at some of the bigger schools. They need some dogs on the offensive line and defensive line. They need some big bodies, because if you want to compete in the Big Ten, you can't do it with these undersized guys. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, I have some high hopes for his short recruiting class last year. Marcus Finger is always retweeting our things.
Yeah.
He came in as a freshman over 300 pounds, so hopefully we get him tuned up and ready to go and he can produce. I mean, almost no matter who you are as a freshman, you don't really play in college at this level.
Right.
So even if he is the future, not shocking that he's not out there playing. So hopefully we got a couple of those going. Like you said, junior college, definitely a big place, because they'll come in with 2 years to play and get them out there, and they're right, bigger, more adult type frames. And that's what you need. We need some hogs.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we got 3 games left. We got one more home game at Nebraska, or with Nebraska coming in. This schedule, it's not going to be easy. We've got Ohio State, Nebraska at home, and then Michigan State to close the year out.
So we're obviously going to run the table and go to a bowl game, right? Let's do it.
I love the optimism, man.
Let's win the horseshoe.
And, you know, the part of me that wants to hold on to hope for that just is the fact that how well this team played last year against Ohio State at home and just the pure enjoyment of that entire game.
Best game.
But, God, I mean, when you really think about it, though, like – we lost so much last year. We lost so much. And you know, again, it goes back to the
offensive linemen. Yeah. Yep.
Like that's our biggest hole right now is the trenches. And it affects everything.
It does.
It affects the running game. I mean, not to sugarcoat it, but McFarland's play has been a shell of what he did last year. No pun intended or pun intended. it has. It's been a shell of what he did last year. And we're seeing teams game plan for him to run east and west, which is what he did a lot of last year, and he can't get around the corner because they're there waiting for him.
Yeah, I mean, you got Derwin Gray went to the Steelers. He was drafted. Damian Prince was on a few NFL squads. I saw he just got drafted in the XFL because he was cut off NFL. So hopefully that gives him another look. Maybe somebody realizes how much different our line looks without those two players and gives him another run through practice squads and see if he can make it in the NFL.
Because it's
pretty obvious those two boys were a real big difference for us.
Yeah, and then you mentioned typically freshmen don't get a whole lot of playing time at this level. Well, we got a freshman playing the most important part of the offensive line at left tackle in Duncan, and I'm not saying he's played horribly, but he's played like a freshman.
Yeah.
He's played like he's got work to do on his footwork, and he's just not a very – for being as big as he is, he just doesn't – he seems kind of soft. He doesn't seem very strong.
Yeah, I mean, it's a one-off. You know, you don't spend a lot of time looking at the offensive line unless you really break down film, especially live. You just can't see it live very well. But he did have a false start in this game. Now, granted, the defensive end jumped a little bit, but he came out – he didn't cross the line. So he comes out of his stance – and he goes and touches the defensive lineman. And it was just like the softest little two-hand pat. It looked like a patty cake play. I'm sure he just had realized what he was doing. Like that it was already, oh, crap, I messed up with a false start. But it just kind of looked pretty embarrassing. I'm sure somebody in the film room is going to give him some stuff for his little patty cake touch. If you're going to get the 5 yards, you might as well hit this man once hard. What are you doing?
Realistically, to wrap this up, man, all right, like I said, we've got 3 games to go. Ohio State, Nebraska, and Michigan State. Do we win any of these? Realistically, take your Maryland Terps hat off and your Maryland shirt off and your Maryland shoes off and everything you got Terps-wise. I don't know what your underwear looks like, but take everything else off for a second. Can this team win one?
I wear a cup that's got a turtle shell on it at every football game.
That's weird.
All right, now taking all of that off, I truly believe Nebraska is in the same...
Oh, man.
I think it's in the same category as Indiana. We lost, but it was a coin flip. I think it's a coin flip. I would have to say we lose the other two games. I can see a scenario where we beat Michigan State, but I don't predict it. And I see no scenario where we beat Ohio State.
I see no scenario for Ohio State. I see no scenario for Michigan State. The only scenario I see for Nebraska is if we see Lance Lejeune come in and play an entire game. If we actually take the reins off of him and come in and let him do what he can do.
You jumped off the Dassault train that quick? What if
Dassault's
on the
If Dassault's in there, I feel like maybe we have a shot too. I worry about Dassault for the same reason I worry about for any other quarterback out there is the terrible offensive line play. Anybody out there is going to be running for their lives, right? Well, the only way you can avoid that is if you've got the legs to avoid it. And I think Lance Lejeune has the best set of legs on our team.
Lance Lejeune has the most explosive set of legs on our team. Piggy has shown time and time again he avoids contact better than anybody.
I agree with that, and I'm taking Piggy out of the equation, thinking that maybe his injury is going to be too bad to carry him through. That he might not play. Now, if he's available, I'm still on Piggy. I still think he's the best overall option. If we're going to pick one quarterback out of the group that we have to win right now, if we had to go win a game tomorrow, Piggy is the best guy for that job right now. If you said Josh Jackson, what are you watching?
I don't know. Again, we go back to this. What did Locksley promise this guy? Like, you know, I talked when Josh Jackson got hurt that this was a best case scenario because maybe he told Josh, come here. You're my number one guy. I'm giving you the reins. No ifs, ands, or buts. and that injury lets you see another quarterback. Now you put him back out there, embarrass himself again. I don't know why we keep giving him chance and chance again. It doesn't feel like pay for play. It feels like Josh Jackson's dad is paying Locksley to keep him on the field.
Something. I don't understand it. Like it literally makes absolutely no
Maryland's
sense.
Maryland's
doing
to me. Things backwards. The rest of the country's paying players to play. Which, by the way, we should mention that the comment by Locksley about Dante Demas.
Oh.
How Dante. This was obviously a slip of the lips. This is a misnomer. So you always say that it's a business trip. You know, we're going up to Minnesota for a business trip. So right. This is an extension to that. Locksley was asked about the Dante Demas balls that were deflected off his hands. And Locksley unfortunately stated, Dante Demas is a wide receiver. He's paid to make those plays. Which, again, obviously he just meant it in a rhetorical sense. If we're paying Dante Demas to drop balls,
we're going about things the wrong way.
Wrong. We need to figure out one of these teams that cheat right.
Going around it the wrong way.
So I'm certain that was just an extension. Like, we're, you know, you talk about things as a business trip. That's why you wear suits. That's why you take it as this is your job. Do your job. So then an extension of job and business is you get paid to do it.
Yeah.
So I that's all it was. That's all I feel it was. Again, if we are paying, we're getting ripped off. So I just put it out there. I first kind of forgot that it happened since it was last week.
All right. So again, I hate feeling like we're turning into one of these doom and gloom podcasts out there, because I can't stand to listen to the doom and gloom podcast, and I don't want to be that type of podcast.
I love a lot of our players. I just don't like
the
results.
And I want you guys to know that this is just pure frustration. Neither one of us are guys that try to bash other players, unlike certain people out there on social media. I'm not going to throw names out there, but one of which got the attention of some other parents. Look, there's a lot to still like about this group of players, and things are going to get better. We're going to have a better recruiting class next year. Hopefully Locks can do some magic again with the junior college transfers and getting some guys in the transfer portal and that kind of thing. We're not so far away that I'm ready to throw in the towel on this, you know, university. We're not. We've and got even, some good pieces here. We just got to build around them.
And even if we were, there is no reason. You know, we've talked bad about Josh Jackson today. You know, but there's very little way to break down something enough.
Yeah, but I'm not gonna talk about him, the person.
Yes.
I'm not gonna talk about his character. I'm not gonna talk about anything to try to belittle him as a man.
I'm not gonna call him names. I'm not gonna say he's not trying.
Right.
I'm not gonna call, you know.
There's no doubt about it in my mind. There's something going on up there mental. I truly believe that. As a person who suffers from anxiety, I can see anxiety in other people pretty well. There's something going on with this guy, mental. If it's whether it's something that he's never been diagnosed with or something that he just doesn't understand fully, you don't go from playing the quarterback position all your life and doing it at a high level at Virginia Tech, where in his freshman year he played very well. You come in here into Maryland, yes, it's a different offense, but on simple pass plays, you're throwing the ball 10 feet over somebody's head or 10 feet short of them or 10 feet to the right or 10 feet to the left. You're so far off the mark unless there's something mental going on. Yeah. And I feel bad for the kid, but we're trying to win football games. So and we're trying to attract recruits from other areas.
Yeah, I'm not even like... Yes, I would love to win football games, but the biggest thing is these are nationally televised games. You
right.
have to showcase that you have something here, and we do have something here. We have two very good running backs. Again, we discussed Javon Leak maybe playing himself into a fourth or fifth round draft pick. Whether
right.
he wants to leave for that, you know, that's up to him and his mother, who we were discussing here about people being attacked as
yeah.
people name calling. That's up to him. I hope he comes back. I hope he, you know, puts the DMV on his back and we can actually see this transmission, see him be in a second round pick next year. I think Ant McFarlane, unless a lot of things change, isn't going to have an option to go to the NFL.
Yeah,
so
he
I think
will.
He'll
be- he'll get a shot in the NFL because of his shiftiness, because
this
of
year?
His speed. This year, no. I mean,
that's
this
what I'm saying. I think okay. he could have an NFL future. I'm just saying because of his production this year, I don't see him leaving now like we thought at the beginning of the year. He could show off and show and be out of the program. That's right. All I'm saying. Right. He could have an NFL future for certain. He's got that skill set.
Right.
I just don't know if he's draftable right now with what we've seen.
All right.
Granted, injury was part of that. We have the Chance Campbells of the world that we're looking forward to. You have, you know, Nick Cross, who it looks like a grown man.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an 18-year-old freshman, and he looks like he knows what's going on. He's built like a man. He's playing like a man. I've never seen him quit not one second. Now, again, right. I'm not going to be – I don't want you to put out that I'm putting the rest of the team as quitters. Penn State, I saw a little bit of it. I'm not going to say I've seen it every other game, but – I think that was more of a letdown than quitters. You can't just call somebody a quitter. It's just you get so hyped for something. You're under the lights, and then you just get slapped in the mouth. Or you think you're doing your job, and somebody keeps throwing interceptions at the 10-yard line. You know, what are you going to do? You hang your head a little bit. But Nick Cross, I've never seen do that. Antoine Brooks plays his ass off every day.
He does.
I hope Antoine Brooks, being a senior, I hope he gets his shot of being drafted. I think that he could be a real difference maker. Unfortunately, teams have figured out a way to take him out of his natural position. They're making him cover constantly. He's not quite as good as covering as he is when he actually gets to play safety.
Yeah, he's a strong safety.
He's a strong safety, and that's where he belongs. But somehow, every team keeps going five wide on us and dropping him out.
And this is what I was saying to you at the game. Right now, typically when you see these four and five wide receiver sets, you'd see a dime or a quarter package come in from the defense. The problem is we're so thin at defensive back, you're having guys like Antoine Brooks have to play in coverage where they really technically shouldn't be playing in those packages because of the lack of options that they have.
Yeah, you'd love to have him in the back trying to cover up for somebody else slipping, but if you have nobody to do it, he's got to do it.
Exactly. All right, well, look, let's wrap this one up. We're going to do a separate episode because we're going to cover the basketball team as well. So for you fans out there that are transitioning from football to basketball due to the excitement around that team, make sure you check out the next episode that we put out where we kind of break down the Fayetteville game that was just a in-house kind of scrimmage game the other day and the hype around this seventh ranked national team.
Yeah, I want to say we appreciate you guys so much. The football fans that stuck it through this far.
Yeah.
The ones that are listening to us, we met people at the all across Minnesota that actually knew about us, which was just so amazing. And you guys are definitely some true Maryland fans. We all know there's those fans out there that want nothing to do with football. And we'd like to grow this show a little bit and maybe tease them into football next year. So that's why we're putting out this Maryland basketball thing separate. So please like, share, and retweet this, but especially the basketball. For all these bandwagon fans out here, they're going to be jumping on the Maryland train. For all the ones that just can't stand football and have loved basketball for generations, you know, that's why we want to do this separate and not lose them with the Minnesota trip and our sad, depressing stories about losing these football games. So that's why we wanted to break it up a little bit.
All right. Well, do us a favor. If you've got a question or something you want us to talk about on the show, send us an email at shellandtellpod@gmail.com. Hit us up on social media. You can follow Ryan at TerpsBespert on Twitter. You can follow me at FredBLBS. Follow the show at shellandtellpod on Twitter as well. Make sure you subscribe to all of our podcast apps of choice. We've got Apple Podcasts, we've got Spotify, and we've got Google Podcasts. We're actually on YouTube as well. If you do not have any podcast apps and want to listen to the show, you can find them on YouTube at the Shell and Tell page on there as well. Appreciate you guys tuning in. Ryan, sign us out.
Until next time, guys, here's to wishing all is well under the show.